Hey guys, so we just have a quick note pre-show to tell you guys about some really new exciting things that we have happening. So I'll start off with one of them. So we are now officially part of the Frolic Podcast Network. And we are really, really excited. So this is a podcast network that revolves around books, and, you know, especially like books centered towards women. And we think it's going to be a really great fit. It has some really cool podcasts on it, like Smart Podcast, Trashy Books, and The Shipping Room. And we really encourage you to check out all these other great podcasts that they offer. You can find more shows to add to your podcast subscriptions at frolic.media/podcasts.
Yeah, this is super exciting. So definitely check them out, follow them on socials, you know, tag them in, things that you share with us, because, you know, we're really excited to be working with them.
Yeah, we can't wait to like meet all these other, you know, podcasters kind of within our sphere. It's super exciting, and we are so happy to have found a network that seems to kind of fit us so well. So
yeah, that fits rocks. They're really awesome, and we're just, you know, like, genuinely, I feel like a lot of times you hear these things and you're like, oh, they like have to be saying this, and we really don't. Like, we're just super excited to be with them, and we genuinely feel like this is a super good fit for us and like a great way for you guys to find new podcasts.
Exactly.
So check them out. And then also another really exciting announcement is that today we are launching our Patreon feed.
Yes.
So with this Patreon, guys, we have one level. It's $5 a month, and you're going to get at least around two to three extra episodes per month. We're starting off doing the Alpha series there. So we have a new episode up for you guys today, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you subscribe today, you will instantly gain access to that Alpha's episode.
So that's really fun. So check us out there. We're going to plan, I think, some more exclusive content for the Patreon. And you also have a direct line to us at any time, as you guys know, to kind of ask us for things, make suggestions. We're always going to be ready to take those.
Yeah. And we're really excited about this Patreon because, it gives us a chance to really kind of expand our, you know, talking points beyond the Click book series. And I think that this is something that, you know, while we are interested in the Click, obviously, there's also a ton of other things that you guys like, that we want to talk about. And this is also a way for you guys to, you know, obviously support us a little bit. And that is also really nice because we do, you know, we don't make money off of this podcast.
No,
we actually lose money, producing this podcast.
So that's part of our new partnerships, both with Frolic and with Patreon, is that we're going to start breaking even on the podcast, which is really exciting.
And that's all you can ask, I think, as a young woman working in media, is that you break even.
Right. That's
pretty much the tip of the top.
Yeah, the tip of the top. All right, everybody, welcome back to Girls Like Us. And I actually, Franny, I haven't told you this, but I have a new intro for us. And
okay,
you wrote it.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So our new intro is, because, you know, we're kind of moving past the world of the Click at this point. We're getting more guests. We're kind of like dipping our feet into different waters. So this is Girls Like Us, the podcast that finally asks the question, what does a literature degree get you? With the answer, a podcast for books about children. And yeah, so Franny actually wrote that for our new website, which should be, you know, kind of popping up in your feeds concurrently with this episode of this podcast. But I decided it would be our intro too. So
that's fun. I like that. Thank you, Sophie.
So, what is we talked yesterday, you know, for a different episode, and I think we're both wearing the same clothes.
Yeah, I think we are too.
But what's, like, has anything changed in the last 24 hours for you?
I was sent on a wild goose chase of my own accord.
Right on.
To two grocery stores, which is pretty much the most exciting thing that's happened to me in 9 months. Looking for chaat masala, which is just a spice, and
yeah,
couldn't find it. And it was depressing to me. And, you know, any sort of mild inconvenience right now just becomes a huge emotional
crushing.
Yeah, exactly. What about you? Anything new?
No, I just am continually kind of like shocked and appalled at, you know, so I worked out in my living room this morning. And by this morning, I mean at 1 o'clock. And, you know, proceeded to get in the shower. And I've been doing laundry all morning. And I got in the shower and I kind of placed the laundry basket in front of my boyfriend, who was sitting on the couch playing a video game. Shout out to video games. It's kind of the topic of our episode today. And I placed the laundry basket in front of him, and I got out of the shower, and I at least expected it to be maybe like he had would acknowledge that he saw it. And so I get out of the shower and the laundry basket is like still sitting there. And it seems as if the volume of the video game, which I had, you know, kind of like hinted that I wanted turned down, was in fact turned up. So I'm kind of, you know, it's like that continually having to like reassert my expectations for my household. But
what
it's a
video
classic
game was he playing?
You know, I couldn't tell you. It's something having to do with like robot dinosaurs, and it makes a wah! Sound over and over again. And it's like a girl with red hair, and
Ark something.
Really,
you know what? Maybe our guest
will know. Maybe our guest will know.
I'm going to go ahead and introduce
on the
him.
PlayStation. Yeah, go ahead and introduce our guest, and maybe we can get to the bottom of my query.
Yeah. You guys definitely know him. He is a writer and a podcaster from How Did This Get Played and Doughboys. It's Nick Weiger.
Hi.
Welcome, Nick.
Horizon Zero Dawn.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
What is Horizon Zero Dawn?
Incredible. That
take
was so fast.
Potables for 800. It was I when you first were saying robot dinosaurs, I was like, what could that be? Some sort of like Beast Wars game or something. But then as soon as you said girl with red hair, I was like, oh yeah, Horizon, I got that game.
Are they dinosaurs?
They're like lumbering beasts from an ancient age. It's post-apocalyptic. Like, it's like an apocalypse has happened, and then we are in the far future, kind of. If you've seen Cloud Atlas, like the Tom Hanks portion of Cloud Atlas, where he's in the far future. I mean, Tom Hanks is in a bunch of it, but the most
future. The blackface part of Cloud Atlas? Or?
Yeah, yes. Yes, where everyone's playing different races. And,
yeah.
And we were just not, we're just pretending that's okay. It's basically like some sort of event has happened, a huge amount of time has passed, and now it's like a, you know, civilization is rebuilding, and they're trying to understand this ancient technology, which is actually stuff that would happen in our future. So
on. Okay, well, I'm so glad that's kind of the, all I know about the game is because it often, you know, I'm hearing it from the other room, and it's just like that blah sound.
Yes.
It's like a horrible, horrible noise that I now associate with like trying to go to sleep, and all I'm hearing is blah.
Yeah, I imagine that's abrasive, not knowing the context. It's
right.
But yeah, it's good. Good taste in games.
And I think this relates to our larger topic today, because like what we're gonna get into is I really struggle with video games. Like, it's not something that was a part of my childhood. It's not something that was like it's just not how my brain works. And so for today, we played The Click Sealed with a Diss, the DS game.
Excuse me, it's called Diss and Makeup. So
Diss and Makeup. Oh, shit.
I almost had a panic attack because I was like, did I play the wrong game?
Nick, I probably putting hours into the multiple. Okay. I don't think this series has been optioned for multiple video games. I really hope not.
Well, I'm proving my novice dumb. I believe there's a Click novel that's sealed with a diss.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, that's what I'm thinking about. So, strike one against me. Fran, do you want to introduce this game a little bit further?
Sure. So, first of all, Nick, I know that you worked in video games, right?
Yes.
And kind of, like, specifically branded, because you worked on the Shrek game, right?
I worked briefly on, I might have a credit on Shrek. I worked very briefly on that. The games I put more hours into, years of my life into, are the very forgettable Fantastic Four and Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer video games. And
wow.
Then I also worked a bunch on Pirates of the Caribbean, The Legend of Jack Sparrow, which was a video game adaptation that bridged the first two movies. And then the And then I have a credit on Sopranos Road to Respect, which I think is the most reviled and most well-known game I worked on. Yeah, it's bad. It had a good concept behind it, but then just kind of got derailed by the publisher. But I ultimately didn't have all that much to do with that game. But it's, yeah, I worked on a bunch of these licensed games, and this definitely feels like, you know, one of those where you can kind of feel the budget is a little constrained and mm-hmm. probably development calendar as well.
Right. So I have a question regarding the development calendar. When you say you spent years of your life working on Fantastic Four, does that mean that you start working on the video game like almost concurrent with like the shooting schedule?
It takes longer than the movie. I mean, I'd be curious as to the development of some of these tie-in games these days. They've kind of changed how these adaptations work, where they're a little less tethered to, hey, this, we're going to have the movie, the game of this movie that's coming out day and date of the theatrical release of this film. Now it's more like you'll see a game like Spider-Man Miles Morales, which is just a Spider-Man game that doesn't have really, it's not necessarily tied to a Spider-Man movie. Right. It's just Spider-Man. It just uses that intellectual property. So, but back when I was working in development, yes, it was like this game has to be done by the time the movie is in theaters. And we're going to try to, you know, which I think was timed with the holidays as well, if I can remember, because they, you know, that everyone's going to buy it for Christmas, supposedly, if this movie's a hit, which it wasn't. But the games take so long. It's closer, I think, to like how long an animated film takes.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just years and years, because you've got so many. So many individuals to wrangle, and then just so many, you know, assets to create. Assets being, you know, levels and mm-hmm. characters and so just tomes of dialogue to write. There's just a lot that goes into it.
Yeah. It's certainly, I'm assuming it's probably not a very linear process. They're just, yeah.
Yeah, I think it just depends on the game. But like for a game like Fantastic Four, they actually had the company I got hired at actually had the Fantastic Four license before the movie mm-hmm. went into production. So this project had been in development for a couple years. They got the movie tie-in, and then it became, oh, we got to completely reorient our development towards the film. And so instead of a comic book art, instead of this beat 'em up, now we're going to do more of a 3D adventure game, a hybrid platformer combat game with all the kit, like with Jessica Alba and I forget who the rest of the cast. One of the Chris's.
Chris Evans.
Yeah, Chris Evans was a human torch in that game. So yeah, they had to do like 3D models of all of them. So it was a painstaking retrofitting.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah, that's I always wonder about those games that come out like right on the same release time as movies, just because it always seems like, oh my gosh, like the people who made the game like definitely are putting in more hours than the people who made this movie, and like,
yeah,
for what?
Exactly. Yeah, that's the existential crises I had in my 20s. Because also the labor conditions in video games, the video game industry, are pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's by and large not a non-union. I mean, no, almost exclusively non-union, and except for voice acting and some writing. And then, it just takes so long to make things. It just takes, people are in there for, the term that's used a lot is crunch. So you're basically in crunch, which is like 10, 12 hour days for, you know, months at a time, sometimes years at a time, weekends. I had a stretch where I did 19 straight 12 hour days, including Easter Sunday. It was just like, it just starts to wear on you.
Right.
And then the pay is also pretty bad, because, you know, it's so many people want to get into the industry, and, it's just, they don't have to pay all that much.
Right.
So there are reasons not to go. There are reasons a lot of people burn out and drop out of the industry, as I kind of did, even though it was in a lot of ways like my life stream was to develop video games. So it's rough. Yeah.
So did you feel like having that experience now, like, did that taint the way you played video games at all? Is it hard to like separate that?
Great question, Fran. And actually that affected my enjoyment of video games throughout, you know, most of my 20s. I was not playing games nearly as actively as I do now or as I did beforehand. because it's just like I had a PlayStation controller, Xbox controller on my desk at work. You know, I had an association of like, I get you, this is my job. And so it became a thing where it wasn't a way for me to relax. And I felt so immersed in it when I was in the office. So I'd want to escape in different ways. But that's not true of everyone who works in game development. I've heard it's like kind of like bartending, where it's like, you know, some bartenders are just basically effectively sober because they're just around alcohol so much, and it's just like they get sick of it. And then some bartenders are just like functional alcoholics because, again, they just have so much access to it. I think it's a similar sort of thing with people's gaming habits. A quick anecdote on that. There was a guy at my work who got fired because he was doing World of Warcraft raids all night. He would go home, he would do an all-nighter doing World of Warcraft raids with his guild, and then he would come into work and he would sleep in the one of the men's room stalls.
Oh my God.
He got caught, you know, just sleeping in the men's room stalls enough times where they shit-canned him. Yeah. But
enough
it was
times.
Enough times, right.
Which is like 10 to
this
12.
This is your 12th time
yes.
doing
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, wild times.
That's incredible. As someone, you know, as I previously said, doesn't play video games a lot. It's not like a world that I think about a lot, but it does sound very similar to those like hustle industries, like the restaurant bar industry and like the post-production industry, where you're just kind of like, it's like an everyone wants to be here sort of mentality, and you're expected to kind of like have sort of like an army vibe where you just put your head down and do it, and it's like, fuck you if you ask for more.
Yeah, I 100%. I think your comparison in particular post-production, you know, the tech industry is kind of like that, although the tech mm-hmm. industry is a lot more lucrative. Visual effects is I think a big one, where like visual effects, just people are just, you see how many visual effects studios work on one of these big budget movies, and they just like, they need so many people. There's such high turnover. All these companies like just, they're around for 12 months and then they fold because they run out of money because you have to underbid to get these contracts. Happens the same thing, and at least it used to happen. I think it probably still does in game development.
Yeah.
And everyone just treated like shit. I talked to a visual effects guy back when I was working in the video game industry. It was someone who was working on one of the Spider-Man movies. And it was just, it felt like we were talking into a mirror, because we were just talking about how shitty our work
right.
was, how it was something
yeah.
we always wanted to do, and then just it was such a fucking miserable job,
yeah.
Where you got no pay, and then you were just there for forever. It was like it seems like VFX is probably a really really close parallel.
Yeah,
not to mention just like staring at a screen all day
right.
long.
Yes. Yeah,
it's a nightmare. Like your body starts to like physically decay at that point.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So I really like to think about this in the context of the game we played today, because if anybody spent that amount of time and kind of like emotional and physical energy on this game, it makes me, you know, like sad, because the game is just like absolutely, I've never found, like, you know, the video games that I do play, I've never found a game so irritating to play before.
Yes.
Yeah.
The gameplay, and I think that if I think back to like playing a Nintendo DS, you know, 15 years ago, I think this gameplay, it wasn't necessarily like too different from a lot of like girl kind of focused DS games.
Absolutely.
That I would have played. But let's, before we really dissect the gameplay, let's kind of talk about the basic plot of the game.
I'm gonna go ahead and just read the Amazon description.
Please.
The Click Diss and Makeup is an empowering game of social maneuvering.
Wow.
Where the player attempts to survive in one of the most harsh and unforgiving environments on Earth, Octavian Country Day School, OCD. Players will use gossip, fashion, and wit to make friends, join cliques, attend classes, and even work after-school jobbies with a variety of exciting minigames. Play a variety of exciting minigames to earn cash or increase your cool. Along the way are a variety of challenges and tricky situations that make the climb up the social ladder tough, including getting invited to one of the hottest parties of the year. The Click Diss and Makeup highlights the sassiness of the Click books and a few lessons in popularity exclusive to the Nintendo DS. Like the fans of the book know, the only thing harder than getting in will be staying in. So I'd like to highlight that says that this game was empowering. That's one of the primary adjectives used.
This is something that I think was like a huge bag that was dropped in, you know, the early to late 2000s, was making good video games focused on young women. Because it's like, to call this video, so a great idea, you know, buying an IP that, you know, so for you, Nick, the Click, all of the books save for the first one were New York Times bestsellers. Okay. This woman who wrote the books, like, she really made out with this. Like, people were going ham for these books. They were incredibly popular. They were a huge cash cow. There was a direct-to-TV movie produced by
Tyra Banks.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it was really, like, they could have made a very interesting game that kind of explored the sort of social, like, dynamics that a lot of girls like maybe experience in middle school and kind of the greater themes that the books were jesting at. Because, you know, Fran, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I just feel like there's such a want for, like, I remember when I, you know, with the few times I did play video games as a kid, it was always something like this that was focused at girls. And there was never
particularly, because I played like Nintendogs. And
right.
Brain Age and these more kind of, I guess, gender neutral video games. But the ones specifically aimed at girls, there was this line of like Imagine was what they were called. And it was like Imagine Motherhood. And you could like raise a baby. And these were all like games you would go to GameStop and get for like $15.
Right.
Like used. So I don't remember there being very many like high quality games directly aimed towards young girls. And the other thing I would like to say about this is that like one of the main components of this game is going to school.
Yeah.
Which yes. I don't think like kids are clamoring for a game that simulates the experience of probably their least favorite part of life.
And can I say, playing this game, not being familiar with the franchise, the thing I think it nails is just how boring school is.
Yes.
Yes.
The school portions of this game suck. And I'm just I'm just like, oh, I got to go to geometry class. I got to do this bullshit homework. And then I got to go to science. And you can't wait to go to the mall. Like, I was literally having those sensations just because those parts of the game are so slow. And the mini games you have to do inside the classes are so, like,
yes.
And it's tedious. It's worsened by how fucking hard it is to move around the school. Like, I don't know if I have spatial relation issues, but every, like, getting to class, getting to lunch, like, finding the girls who had given me errands. So you walk around and different girls from different cliques give you errands.
I'm gonna read the names of the cliques, because, like, basically, every week you are, and the overall gameplay, like, length of this game, I would say 2 hours tops.
Yes.
It's not
I almost beat it.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Guys, because I played it for, like, 90 minutes, and I was like, how much more? There's only, like, a half hour left?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, exactly. So you can easily 100% the click dis and make up. speed run of the click dis and make up. But so the clicks that you can join in order that you're able to join them in are the Eccentrics, and listeners will know that that includes Lane, Mina, and Heather.
Is that my from girls. The book?
Their name is not the Eccentrics in the book, but those are real characters in the book. But I think the rest of these are not. Other than the Eccentrics and the Girls in the Pretty Committee, these are original characters.
Yeah.
And there's the Mathletes, the Artistes, Jocks, and Pop Divas, and the Pretty Committee. And you have to work your way up to join all of these cliques by doing errands for these girls.
now I'm like a, you know, in these sorts of games, I like to like role play a little bit. And so I was like, okay, I'm going with the Eccentrics. They seem kind of goth, kind of quirky. That seems like my vibe.
Yeah.
But the game, like, it's not like in a lot of role playing games, it's like, okay, I have my faction, I have my allegiance, and that's just going to define my character. Here, it's kind of like you have to get into each of these factions. So, like, I get myself into the Eccentrics, I'm like, great, I'm set, I got my click. No, I have to become a Mathlete now. I have to completely remake my personality. I have to get a whole new wardrobe.
The way the game kind of like forces you to go about things is, you'll try to get into this clique at school for about a week, and then at the end of the week there's a party, and that party will provide you information that moves the plot of the game forward. And that segment is basically like a point and click.
Moving the plot of the game forward is a pretty liberal way to say what happens at these parties. I, like, I have to tell you, so the one video game that I play regularly is Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney, because I just like reading. All I want to do is read, like, just in a different different format from, like, a book. Like, if you ask me to move around, if you ask me to, like, you know, strategize with things, I am incapable of doing it. And this fucking plot got me to the point where I was, like, at these parties just being, like, I'm clicking through. Like, it's, like, these people, like, who is Simon? Why do we know him? It doesn't reference. It says we're new in town, but somehow we know Simon.
Yes.
What, like, it could have been so much clearer what was going on. I was literally laying in bed each night this week playing this game, always, like, at least a little bit drunk or high, being like, what the fuck? I need somebody to, like, explain to me what's happening here like I'm a child. Like, I kept, like, rage quitting because I was so confused.
It's hard to follow, and there is so much text in this game that there absolutely is room for them to seed, like, you know, your love interest who come about later at these parties, but they don't at all. They just show up out of nowhere at these parties. But also with the volumes and volumes of text that exist in this game, mostly are insults about your character's appearance, as far as I...
Yes.
Like, it's just like, if for a game that's supposed to be empowering, the first thing that happens when you talk to any character at school is basically they're like, you're wearing that? You look like shit.
Yeah, like, get away from me. Yeah. I can't even talk to you right now.
Yes, and it doesn't explain to you, like, you kind of have to, like, intuit that in order to get these characters to talk to you, you have to go and dress differently.
Right.
Yeah. Like, and you have to go to the mall and...
Right.
Buy outfits that correspond with the character that, or with the clique that you're trying to join. So again, very empowering.
Listener, you may be asking yourself, how do you earn money in this game? And that's through a series of mini games that can only be described as, like, evil and chaotic. Like, these mini games also, to me, completely blew my mind. The only one I could do was, like, the Mexican restaurant one where you're making burritos, because, like, I feel like even a monkey could do that. Like, you just drag the ingredients onto the burrito. But the coffee mini game, did you guys play this one?
Yeah, the coffee mini game is tricky. So what I figure, you've got three different appliances. You've got the toaster oven, you've got the espresso machine, and then you've got the traditional coffee brewer. And basically, you'll, like, a customer will come up. There's a DS game, so on your top screen, a customer will appear on the top screen, and then they'll have a word bubble that says what their order is. And their order will be like a espresso and a bagel. So you'll have to drag a bagel to the toaster oven, and then hit the espresso machine to prep an espresso. The thing that's confusing is, if it's a brewed coffee, if it's a drip coffee, a coffee mug just appears on their tray and you just have to pour it. If it's an espresso, there's no mug.
No.
You have to intuit that you have to get it from the espresso machine, and then a mug just magically appears. So it's just there's a lot of stuff that's just like interface wise and design wise is just a little confusing.
The assets of, like, I guess, like, the character assets used in this game, very slim pickings. There's probably only about, like, 20 characters or so. So in the barista game, you'll get, like, the same five characters coming up to you again and again and, like, asking for different orders.
Right. I'm like, I just gave you a donut. Now you want two muffins and an espresso? It's like, calm down. Like, see
you're
a doctor.
Fucking loading up on carbs. What are you doing?
Yeah. Right.
Calm down. You're in a half marathon?
Yeah.
You see the same people over and over again in all these different businesses. Also, I'll say that so you got this job, you got the coffee, you got the barista job, you've got the taqueria job that was mentioned. You also have, you can work at the clothing store where you can also shop at, and then you can also, there's an ice cream parlor, right? The ice cream parlor is a fourth
one. I
hated
that ice cream.
That one sucks. But basically what that is like, what the hell's that old name? There's a tapper, I think, is this old game. You're just sort of like moving up and down, pitching sundaes at customers who come in at you.
Makes no sense.
It's clunky. But basically all these jobs you just have. So you have, you're a middle school student with four jobs. And then also you get, you get paid on commission for every single one of these jobs. So like if you you get paid for as many sundaes as you prepare and as many coffees and bagels as you serve, that's what your paycheck. So you'll go out and work a shift, and if you nail it, you're walking out of there after like a 90 second mini game with like $170.
I made $800 from barista.
Wow.
These. And it's like in the real world, like the kind of consumerist culture of this game, just there's a lot to unpack, I think, with this.
Well, what's really interesting is that at the very top of the game, when you're in your house, you're kind of led through, you're woken up in the morning, if I remember correctly, and sort of led through the paces of early gameplay by a woman that me, the player, assumed was the character's mother.
No, it's Mrs. Lambert.
Right, exactly.
It's like her nanny.
It's her housekeeper. She's like, you know your parents are in, like, Boca. Like, yeah, I'm driving you to school and also, like, acting in the motherly role. Like, what, like, that also is, like, if these people have left their child at home with the housekeeper, like, they have the money to toss her $800 a week to buy Clit clothes.
Right. Here's what Mrs. Lambert says. She says to you, you'll be fine at your new school. Oh, and don't forget, your father set up several job interviews for you at the mall, so you'll have extra money if you need it. And you can just, like, move between these jobs with, like, no matter, like, you can, that was the other thing about this game that was a little interesting, because, as well at school, you don't have to do any particular job any number of times. Like, I filled up my schedule with the same art class minigame every single day because it was the fastest to get through.
Right.
So in some ways it forces you to do very specific things, but in other ways, like, there's no structure to go through with these minigames.
The absentee parents are an interesting, is that a thematic thing in the Click books?
I would say at least partially. Yeah. Like, the parents are kind of always coming in and out, but there's no main character who has, like, a housekeeper filling that the sole role of a parent, which I just found that to be a very interesting choice for the game, because it was, like, it could have so easily been her mother, or, like, traded back and forth between the mother and father. Like, it just felt like a complicating factor that was just kind of, like...
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird choice. I mean... You know, this feels like I've played a few of these licensed games like this, where it's like, okay, the character for the game is a new character who is your player surrogate. But narratively, it's like, okay, so you're at you transferred to a new school late in the year, and your first day there, your first week there, your parents are out of town. Like, is the circumstance? What is it? There's just no support network for your poor, this poor girl.
No.
Right.
Yeah. No wonder she turns to having to break into all the different cliques.
Right. Look for...
Yeah.
Yeah. It was very strange. I just felt like, and Fran and I were texting about this, like, with something that is such a rich IP, like, the girls in these books are always doing different crazy things. Like, the books are very much not rooted in reality whatsoever. So to have the gameplay...
They, like, go film a movie.
Yeah, like, it's very aspirational. So to have the gameplay be like, okay, first you wake up in the morning, your housekeeper drives you to school, then you have to go to two classes and lunch, then you have to run a bunch of errands for a bunch of chicks you don't know, and then you have to go work at the mall so you can buy clothes. There's nothing fun about that. Like, I can do that in my regular life.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear that it's making me think of I think an older series, Babysitter's Club, which was a similar sort of thing. It's like, you know, this is for, I guess this is for young girls, and it's like lots of, there's some pseudo and like near fantastical stuff, going on adventures, that sort of thing. But the game made me think that this was like, oh, this is like a humorless Mean Girls. This whole franchise is just, you're just at school, it's just normal, and then, but instead of there being like this light comedic edge to it, people are just like mean to you.
Exactly. You are basically constantly bullied. And the other thing that you have to do to kind of join these cliques is trade gossip in a way that is very upsetting.
The gossip is not good gossip.
No.
Well, what is gossipy about most of the gossip?
Yeah, it's like, oh, someone had like a booger on her shirt, and then that'll be it. And then you'll tell that to someone else, and they'll be like, oh my gosh, you are making my day with this.
Well, because they can't, it's a game, you know, they can't be like, you know, Teresa gave Jeff a hand job. That would be right, like an actual like middle school rumor, but they can't do that in this game. Right. So it's literally one of them was, and this was like, because they have a rating for how juicy the gossip is. This was like a 5-star juicy gossip, which is like the character's on fire telling it to you. And it was, I heard the principal's not here because he has the bird flu.
I didn't get that
one. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
One of my favorites was like Lainey's party was so lame that she paid everybody to pretend like it never happened.
Yeah. There were a lot about Lainey and a lot about like, oh, I heard like Jane's dad is broke, so he's cutting off all her credit card usage. I also got one that was, I thought this one was insane. It was from one of the mathletes, and the rumor was, I heard from a reliable source that you are pure evil. I was like, what is it? And you couldn't, every time you tried to regurgitate that to someone else, it would give you like an icy symbol by them. Like, don't, they won't like this gossip. It was very strange.
I didn't get that at all.
Yeah,
I didn't quite understand mechanically, because it early on it's like you're given an errand, which is like this, as you said earlier, the game's kind of mission structure, and you're given an errand to like get a piece of juicy gossip and then bring it back. But like a lot of times you get so you're trying to train, you're trained to be like, okay, I'm gonna, if I hear gossip from somebody, I tell it to somebody else to get more. More of a connection, but it doesn't seem to work that way in practice. Like a lot of times it's like you tell someone a piece of gossip and they're like, who gives a shit? And they're just like, well, then what are we doing here?
Right. Exactly. That's the weird thing is it's like at the beginning of the game. So at the beginning of the game for the listener, you meet Claire, who Claire for Nick is like one of the main characters in the book.
Okay.
And you meet Claire and she's the one who sets up like gossip is everything around here. That's how you're going to make the most points. So if you get gossip, tell it to people. And then, so that's like what I spent the first round of the game doing, like getting gossip and telling it. And it didn't get me any points. Like the girls were like, boo, like get out of here, fatty. Like,
yeah,
it didn't make like, maybe, I don't know. I was going to say maybe the game comes with an instruction sheet, which is idiotic and something that someone who doesn't play video games would say. But,
like, I don't think it does. I have the case right here.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it doesn't.
Yeah, I have the case right here, too.
Yeah, there was nothing, there was very little, like, good kind of prompting throughout the game of, like, telling you what to do.
Oh, no, wait.
There,
oh, my God.
There actually is a manual, yeah.
Oh, yeah, my
and
God.
And it has character bios in it. So this is like more whatever than you get in the entire game, like more lore. Simon, so like Simon, for instance, Simon is an old friend of yours from grade school. He has since transferred to Briarwood Academy.
So you both school. Happen to move to the same place?
Yeah, exactly. I think this game would have been much more interesting if like it. You should have just had to play out the events from the first book.
Yes.
Like, I'm not sure why they're trying to make us a new character in this. Because also, you don't really get to hang out with the pretty committee that much, and that's the whole point of, you know, reading the click books, is you get to be with these specific girls.
Right.
Oh, so that, because I didn't get the, again, just someone who doesn't know this franchise, I didn't get that the pretty committee was some different, like, was the ultimate one. I was like, oh, they're one of the groups, and I honestly thought the pretty committee was maybe like, oh, they're, like, going to be the villains or something. But you're saying, like, they're, like, the main thing in the books.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they are kind of, like, and that's the whole thing with the books, is that these girls are terrible.
Oh,
like,
okay.
They are truly, truly terrible human beings. But and that's kind of like, you know, when we started the podcast, it's like, we both read these books at an age where these characters, maybe how bad they were, was supposed to be satirical, but obviously when you are 12 years old, you don't have a great understanding of satire. So, kind of like you were saying, like, it lacks that, like, Mean Girls edge to it, where it's supposed to be, like, actually, like, funny, and you're supposed to, like, you can't, the books do a very, poor job of, saying that, like, no, these characters being mean to each other is bad. So the Pretty Committee is, like, they're like the main characters of the whole book. And they are very mean in this.
They're incredibly mean. That's the thing is, I don't like, the fact that the game in the Amazon description is called Empowering for Young Girls, and you spend the entire game getting dunked on by, like, different groups of girls, it's just, like, that is, like, to me, the crux of this issue of, like, what the fuck are these games we're producing for young girls then? It goes into the same things we've criticized Lisey Harrison, the author of the Click series, for, where it's, like, where is the, like, the lesson at the end being like, and all of this was bad and you shouldn't do that. Like, it just portrays the bad behavior without actually commenting on it.
Yeah. And on that note, I'll also say, I was expecting when I got my wardrobe together and I was like, okay, I am like in full mathlete cosplay now. This is like, you look at the meters, you see that they are going to love these shoes and this top for whatever reason. This is like their garb. Also, does not seem to correspond. Like, it's not like, oh, I'm picking out something kind of conservative and nerdy and now the math.
No.
It seems completely arbitrary.
The clothing is horrible.
Yeah.
Like, the visual element of all of the clothing, it looks horrible on the screen. I get that this game was, like, produced in, like, 2009 or whatever, but it's just, the whole thing is bad.
It looks bad even for its era, because there are some very good, some DS, Nintendo DS games that look a lot better than this. But you don't get you get insulted when your clothes are bad. But if you dial it in and it's perfect, you don't get the positive feedback of, like, wow, looking sharp. Just like that just lets you have a normal conversation with someone. And it's just
exactly.
Like, give me a carrot, not just a stick. Like, let me tell me I look good as hell, because I do.
It doesn't
give you that.
Spent my $800 from serving people lattes and bagels on this outfit. So give me some validation.
Right.
$800 is like what you make in a month as a regular barista.
Right.
Exactly.
Like, it's almost offensive.
It is. I will say that I've played a number of like social sims and dating sims, and they all tend to be like this one, which is they're transactional. Which is I think just comes from, you know, guys with social anxiety being the people who develop these things. It's just yeah. Like they're the one that I always think of, which is a game I love, and it's a solo development by this guy Concerned Ape, who's a genius. But this game Stardew Valley, and it has a dating component to it. And the dating component is very typical of the genre, but it's like, I find out what someone likes, someone I want to court likes, and then I give them enough of that thing, and then eventually they fall in love with me. And so, like, Leah likes salads. Okay, I'm going to give Leah 8 salads, and after the 8th salad, she is going to take my hand in marriage. And it's basically, this game is just teaching you that of just, like, it's, again, as it's just basically saying, like, dress for the job you want, I think is basically the moral of this game. Like, if you dress like the clique you want to hang out with, then they will be your friend, because that basically seems to be the only way to advance.
Right.
Yeah. That's the thing, is like, once you do dress appropriately, you have the option of like running errands for these girls, doing specific mini games for them, etc. But if you aren't dressed in an outfit that they deem appropriate, then your whole day is lost and you can't do anything. You just have to go to your class.
Right. And draw your shapes in your art class over and over again. Yeah.
God, the minigame
sucks so
bad. What
was your guys' favorite school minigame?
I think it was, honestly, the art. I did a similar sort of thing where I just loaded up my calendar with as many art. By the way, every week you can completely change your class schedule.
That's how my middle school worked.
Yeah.
I walked right up, I scanned my little student ID card, and I said, I want to do drama all week, please, sir.
the one that I, that like the... Geometry is okay, because it's just sort of you're just kind of a puzzle thing that you're doing. You're just rearranging dots to form the correct grid. The one that I just like could not grasp until I failed it a number of times was chemistry.
Yeah,
because the iconography in that is so confusing. Because the flasks, it has all these colored flasks.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has a flask that it uses to demonstrate what you're supposed to do with the flask, like you either shake it or you stir it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that appears on the top screen. but the color of that one does not match the flask that you're supposed to do it with. So no, it's like you'll see like an orange flask with a shake symbol to shake it up and down, but you're actually supposed to touch the blue, yellow, and red one, which you don't get unless you're watching which ones bubble when it flashes the icon for what you're supposed to do with them. It is very confusing.
It's like a Simon Says type gameplay, but that, yeah, I absolutely, chemistry was far and away my least favorite game.
Yeah.
Very as in confusing. Life, chemistry was
yeah, exactly.
My least favorite. To me, like, if you're going to do a bunch of mini games, so, like, this game is basically broken up into mini games. Like, you do this horrible, horribly designed kind of walk around thing to get from mini game to mini game. And if you're going to do mini games, like, make them, first of all, different from one another. A lot of the mini games felt very, like, too similar to one another. And make them, like, I don't know, maybe increase in difficulty as you play the game, or like make them more interesting. Like, it just became like a total slog to have to play these games to like get through to the next level.
Yeah, like I said earlier, like the school sucks so bad. It's such a drag. And there's a feature which you'll cut, which will happen, which is useful, which is you may want to do, you may not want to do it if you need to collect more money to expand your wardrobe. But if once you get the party invite for that week, you can skip the rest of school and just fast forward to the weekend and go to the chapter ending party, which is just like, that was a godsend, because it was like, I can't do fucking 3 more days of this shit.
No,
it's just such a drag.
I always cut out on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Tuesday was the end of the week for me.
As in my real life.
Yeah.
I cut out on Tuesday to go to a party with a bunch of 12-year-olds.
I want to talk a little bit about the music in this game.
Oh my god.
Which I found to be my favorite part of the game. I don't know if you guys played with your volume on at all, but the music in this game is just truly just wild. It kind of oscillates between what I would call like music from the same genre that like Lindsay Lohan's band plays in Freaky Friday, like kind of like a original teen movie song that the band within would play. And then also there's like British rap in it. I don't know if you guys heard this song.
There is something that like could be closely kind of like, as like parodic grime almost, where it's like it's trying to be like a cleaner, softer version of grime, which I found to be very interesting.
I had the sound on for about like the first 15 minutes, and then I went
so
the rest
grating.
Of the way. Yeah, it's very a lot of the sound design is very grating, but that's interesting. I missed this British rap song.
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna play it.
It ain't a problem, it's my job, son. Sweep the streets clean, rinse it up, keep it lean. There's players in the frame, up in the game. Thinking things have changed, but it's still the same. If you all move to my plan, things will work out fine, turn out grand.
So, that's kind of the rap stylings that you are getting in this game.
That's what I imagine Chet Hayes' music sounds like.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways. It reminds me a lot of, do you guys know that BBC One, like, mockumentary that was, like, it's, like, a guy in, like, Manchester trying to be a rapper, and he is the one where it's like, it's now a TikTok sound where he's like, 2 + 2 = 4 - 3, that's frequent maths. I'm looking at a course of blank faces, so I'm gonna
familiar with this. It sounds great.
Kind of like a Love Island, like if a Love Islander was given a recording contract, I assume that's kind of what would come out of it.
I listened to a different kind of British rap while I was playing this game, which is that I spent almost the entire time I was playing this game listening to the 30-hour-long Princess Diana audiobook that I've been listening to for the past like week and a half.
And she kind of had her own clique, you know.
In a lot of ways, yes. In a lot of ways, yes. She
and
really
Nick,
found
I know you
her
didn't
clique.
Finish this game, but this game does end in you being shot in a car, unfortunately. So.
Oh boy, that's
true. Is that how you think Princess Diana died?
Is that not how she
Hold
died?
Hold on. Say how you think Princess Diana died.
There was something with a car, right?
But you said shot in a car.
Okay, car crash, right?
Yeah, she died
okay,
in a car
crash. Okay, excuse me.
Were you thinking of the Kennedy assassination?
I think I was combining the two in my brain.
I, what, Sorry, I don't want to drag you on the podcast.
No, you can drag me.
And I don't think you're ignorant for not knowing about the Princess Diana, but I love that you, for all these years, maybe have been, like, going through life being like, Princess Diana was full-on shot close range in the back of a limo.
Well, it was something with her, we don't have to get into this, but it was, like, her, like, driver was drunk or something,
yeah,
right?
He was drunk, yeah.
Okay. The metaphorical.
Yeah.
As someone who recently... Yeah. He has spent 30 hours of my life listening to an audiobook about Princess Diana. I'm ready and willing to jump on any sort of like inconsistencies that anybody may make in their assessment of her.
I think the maybe shot is in your head because the paparazzi were involved in it, right?
Yes.
That was like remember the initial narrative is they were saying that there were a bunch of cameras in her face as she was like bleeding to death, you know.
Yeah. Right. So basically, I'll give you guys kind of a quick rundown of what happened. She was dating Playboy Dodi Fayed at the time. And this is Dodi Fayed, whose father, Mohammed Al Fayed, owned, like, he was just like a rich dude. He owned like a yacht. He owned the Ritz-Carlton in Paris. And so the two of them were kind of, they had only been dating for about 6 weeks. And Dodi had bought a yacht for Diana. And it was like this whole thing because like Charles didn't want the children around him because he was a coke addict. And Dodi was always like coke fiending. And he was famous for like being like on the town, coked up out of his mind, doing crazy shit. So what happened that night is they kept bouncing back and forth between his apartment in Paris and the Ritz, which his dad owned. Mm-hmm. They go out the back door of the Ritz. The paparazzi spot them. They get on motorcycles behind the car. Turns out the driver has been doing shots all night when everybody thought he was taking medicine. This is classic 1997 behavior. And so they kind of go through this tunnel. The driver, who has been doing shots all night, decides, I'm going to crank this shit up to 100 because coked out Dodi is yelling at him in the back. They go through this tunnel going like 200 miles per hour. And a motorcycle pulls up next to them. They kind of spin out and the rest, as they say, is history.
Wow.
Boy, that's upsetting. And I'm glad you got to hear that. Wow.
Yeah.
We're probably slinging Sundays at the mall.
Yeah, exactly. I'm doing my little job. I'm at my little school learning all about the Princess Diana killing.
Yeah. So yeah, before we kind of... Oh, go ahead, Nick.
Oh, I was just going to say, and do you suspect there was a second shooter on the grassy knoll?
Yeah. If we're talking about second shooters, I would say yes. In terms of the Kennedy assassination, I think we all know that there was, like, maybe not a second shooter, but that the Kennedy assassination was, at least partially an inside job. Right?
Yeah, I'm into that theory.
Yeah, like, it's like, I feel like it's one of, it's kind of like the Epstein theory at this point, where the idea that something happened with the Kennedy assassination, like, we all kind of... Like, that's the hegemonic notion at this point, is that we all kind of agree something went down.
I mean, it's like the, you know, what's the most famous assassination, well, not the most famous anymore, but the most consequential political assassination, the Archduke Ferdinand. That was a whole thing where it was like, the guy who actually killed him was one of, like, six different assassins who all had their various attempts. Gavrilo Princip, right, was, like, and it's like, if the first guy had just killed him successfully, then maybe we just think it's, like, a weird lone gunman thing, and we don't know about this whole, you know, cell of conspirators. And so, yeah, maybe just, like, he was successful, but he was part of a larger plot. I don't know.
Yeah, I just don't, I mean, like... There's no way, and people also have theories about the Princess Diana killing. I think it was just because the driver got drunk, and like, you know, I don't know. As somebody who works in the service industry, I can't see myself drunk driving, but I can see myself getting drunk on the job if I, you know, I'm spending the night at the Ritz with the Princess of Wales. But yeah,
and maybe you think like also maybe by the time you get to a hotel, you don't think you're going to be leaving. You know what I mean?
That's kind of, the idea is that the staff maybe thought that they would be going up, and then at that point, you know, it becomes, like, this risk to your job if you're like, oh my god, I've been drinking all night, I can't
get
behind the wheel of a black Mercedes. Guys, get in our Discord if you have theories about the killing of Diana. I'd be willing to discuss it. Maybe we can do, like, a Zoom call or something.
I can't wait for James Franco's Hulu adaption of
Diana. Right.
So before we kind of wrapped up, I wanted to, this game is not very popular, I don't think.
Not with me.
Yeah, certainly not with me either. But I could not find a lot of, like, reviews or information on it. Though I did find two that I wanted to share. So, one of these is from the website commonsensemedia.org, and this site is a site that I know my mom would go on a lot because it would tell parents, oh, like there's like sex in this. You might not want to show your kid this because of this violence. It would break down media for, you know, so you could better control what your child was watching. Now, this game only had one review from a parent, because it breaks down reviews into parents and from children. And this parent said that the age of children that this game would be appropriate for would be 2 or older. So a 2-year-old could play this game. And so this parent says, excellent video game for girls. The Click, Diss, and Makeup is an amazing game that young girls will enjoy playing. There's fun mini games, and girls can learn the value of a dollar thanks to the shop.
Wow.
Oh, no.
Which I thought was very funny.
Well, but that kind of goes back to your original point that, like, a lot of the video games targeted at young girls are all, like, home economics based.
Yeah, exactly.
Where it's like learning like how to care for a baby or like learning like how to spend all your money.
Yeah.
I think that comes from, you know, development studios filled with guys like me who have been awarded a contract. You're like, what are girls like? I don't know. Like fucking they were buying clothes. I don't know. I put that in the game, you know? And so, hopefully that's less of an issue these days, but yeah, definitely feels the case with this game.
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
And then the other, like, quick review thing that I found was on Game FAQs, which, is a discussion board for games. Not a lot of activity on the Click, Diss, and Makeup board, except for one thread that is titled, I hope you can pick on the fat kid.
Oh, no.
I know.
That's
do
what,
better,
Game
Facts.
Yeah, people in my middle school, when I showed up, they were like, I hope that we can pick on the fat kid.
Oh, no.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But no, it is real. It's like, I guess for some kids, it could be like a willing, like a good place to get out their aggression, maybe, by like bullying in game rather than in real life.
But you're not really given the chance to bully, though.
Yeah, you're just a punching bag. If you could snap back at people, like if you could develop your social cachet to a point where you could reply to an insult with an insult, you know,
right,
that could maybe give it something.
Yeah, that's the thing is so let's maybe talk about this. If we were to take kind of, you know, not go too far from like the basic premise of this game and like give it some notes as to like punching it up a little bit, like, mm-hmm. What would they be?
A big one for me, and this was a point you made much earlier, Sophie, but I thought it was astute and correct, which is navigating the world. I've got my DS right here as I'm talking through this. Navigating this world is so difficult because there's no spatial logic to how rooms are clustered together and like what, like, you know, it's not like you go left in a screen, you exit the left side of the screen and you enter the right side of the screen in the next room, so you know, okay, that's where the exit. It's just completely arbitrary. So it's so hard to tell where the hell you are in the mall or in the school, which are two big environments. Even the house, which I think has like 3 rooms, I was just like, wait, am I going? Yeah. I wanted to go change clothes. And I was like, wait, no, I'm outside. Like,
yeah,
what happened?
Yeah.
I have no idea where the fuck I'm supposed to be going here. It's
your
very
house
confusing.
Consisted of your room, your closet, and then outside.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. It's
that's
a studio,
kind of
basically.
The world of a young girl. If you think about it, it's kind of a metaphor for how young women are kind of trapped in the bedroom space to kind of live their lives there.
Yeah, I think of it, I mean, I don't think this game even needs you to be walking around, because walk cycle is so slow. You're just
it's
like,
so
it takes
slow.
So fucking long to crawl across like the cafeteria.
Yeah.
That I would just be like, you click and have a map of the school. That's, you already have one. Just make that the main screen, the map of the school.
Right.
You click to the room you want to go in and then you're there. You don't need to
and
walk
around. And then you don't have
explore.
To poorly design all of the hallways. Like some of,
yes.
What really frustrated me is some of the hallways get deeper where you can click further into them and some of them don't. And so, like, just inconsistencies like that in a game that is mostly consisting of walking around, it's just, like, that seems like something that should have been edited for.
Yeah, I would, and you know, again, you never know exactly what their restrictions were. I think it's entirely possible that, you know, hey, portions of this game were outsourced or, you know, some a different team was working on the school and the mall, and so they're just like, and they weren't communicating with each other, and so that's why they're completely, you know,
right.
That's why they're organized so confusingly. I don't know, who knows exactly what's going on, but either way, it's for the end user experience, it's just very confusing.
Yeah, I think my biggest note for this game would be to. I don't think you have a lot of autonomy as your own character. I don't think that there's ever a point where you can choose in between dialogue. So you are always saying, you know, exactly. You never get to choose what to say, and that never influences a story more. And this is like a problem I think with a lot of games. Like Nick, I know you guys covered on How Did This Get Played the like Vanderpump Rules episode.
Oh yeah,
game. An episode is like a similar deal where it doesn't really matter what you say. It's not going to adjust the plot of the story, which for me makes it frustrating. Because I would love if this was like a, you know, like a BioShock game where like at the end of it you have multiple endings, but you can't. And so I think also like, and not to go with the reviewer that said I hope you can pick on the fat kid, but you. I think the whole point of reading these books that Sophie and I've talked about a lot is like you probably, if you're reading these books as a teen girl, you're probably someone who is not very popular. This is not the life you are living. So to kind of get to be in this game and then still have to be like, you know, a loser who is picked on, you should be able to have a little more power, I think, because this game would be so much more interesting if you were playing as Massey or playing as Claire. But instead, you don't get any of that kind of what makes the book fun, which is seen inside of these girls' lives who you are nothing like.
Yeah, I would say that my main criticism, similar to what you said, Nick, so the two video games that I've spent the most time in my life playing are probably Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney and then a game that I had on my flip phone as a kid called Surviving High School, which I think is very similar to, like, I think that was, like, the blueprint of, like, the episode games, mm-hmm. Where it's, like, there's no navigation. Like, you are kind of moved from place to place. Like, later in the game, you can sometimes choose where you're going based on what's happening, but you need to... You have autonomy for who your character is. So, like, Nick, at the beginning, you were like, oh, I'm gonna roll with the eccentrics the whole time. Like, if you had been able to do that and deepen your relationships with the different characters and actually had, like, the ability to move throughout the world as a character of your own choosing, I think it would be 100% a better game.
Yeah, I fully agree with both of your points. I'll just add one more thing, which is just the art of this game. Like for basically, okay, my main goal is to buy new clothes, mm-hmm. and this was touched on earlier, how the clothes just aren't that all that appealing, but also the character designs aren't all that like appealing or you know, and I feel like also for the clicks, I feel like every girl in this game just looks like they're in the same clique. Like there isn't like a very distinct like oh, the eccentrics all dress a little goth and a little quirky, and the mathletes all dress very, you know, a dorky. It's like there's nothing like that. And so I think just like if the art direction, if the character designs were a little bit more appealing, if all the wardrobe was like just a little cooler to get and to wear, and you could and you really reflected that in your character's appearance, and if all the cliques like looked. I mean, I just give me something, like, you know,
right?
But everything felt so generic, and I couldn't tell. You couldn't even tell like some of these characters apart visually. I'm just like, I think you're one of the mathletes. I don't fucking know.
That was an issue for me several times as well.
You also don't get to like design your own character really. You get to choose from like one of maybe five pre-made avatars. Which for me, that's always one of my favorite part of any video game is like designing, you know, someone to look like me. And you really don't get that in this either.
No.
I would not play this game again.
yeah.
Shockingly.
it's a bummer.
So do you guys have any final thoughts on this game?
It turned me off from even... I will say, like, continuing to play DS games because of how often I had to be, like, tapping the screen to get my little bitch to move faster.
my final thought, be nice to each other.
Okay.
Yeah.
If someone's got a shirt on that doesn't fit them, you don't have to tell them their shirt looks like shit and they shouldn't be standing anywhere near you. It's like, be polite.
Yeah. I think that's a good, that's a more empowering message than...
An incredible thought.
Yeah. I wanted to say one final thing, which is, I took a screenshot of this, which is that Dylan at one point says to you, when you finally get into the pretty committee, one thing that she says is, you should lose double the weight when you choose salad on cheeseburger day in the cafeteria, which made me sad.
Man.
Yeah, that's yeah. The thing is, it's like, it just took all of the worst parts of the books and distilled them into, like, further flattening the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The characters are pretty much all the same.
It also feels messaging-wise, like, it's like that, I don't know if you're familiar with the Simpsons episode where there's a talking Malibu Stacy, and everything talking Malibu Stacy says is like, don't ask me, I'm just a girl. Like, it feels like that level of design, like, this demographic is getting exactly the wrong messaging that they should be getting from an entertainment product.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Awesome. So, do we want to do our States of the Union for the week?
Yeah, let's explain to Nick what this is.
Yeah, so Nick, in the Click books, each chapter, or most chapters that are narrated by the character of Massey, who you met in the video game, she ends the chapters from her perspective writing a State of the Union of what's in for the week and what's out for the week. So at the end of the episode, we like to share one thing for us, for our week or for this discussion or just for our lives in general, what's in and what's out. So Fran, do you want to go ahead and start us off?
Sure. I'll start. And, you know, Sophie, we talked about this on our Patreon episode, but in for me this week is going to have to be Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. Amazing show. Very excited to see where this season goes. Out, like I said, it's going to be the fact that I couldn't find this specific spice at, I'm going to put them on blast, Cermak grocery store.
I should have told you. I should have told you yesterday. I should have told you yesterday when you were saying you were going to go to Cermak not to go there.
Well, I heard there's two different Cermaks. This is new information my roommate told me. There's a Cermak produce and the Cermak market, and they are not connected.
They are not connected.
The Cermak produce has the better bulk spices, but
yeah,
I was really annoyed, Jewel Osco, bad experience as well, as it always is. So that's good. I guess grocery stores are just out this week.
Okay.
For me.
That's cool. Yeah. No, attack food supply. that's, I think, a smart stance for our podcast to take. I would say in for me is just like trying to stay moving throughout this whole, you know, we're headed into what are ostensibly for us, especially in Chicago, going to be some really tough months. Like, it's 4 p.m. and it's already, you know, full on dusk outside. So I've been trying to keep my workout routine going. I've plugged them on the podcast before. They do not pay us, nor will they probably ever pay us. But the Peloton app, it works. The instructors are, like, sufficiently corny. The other day I did a themed weightlifting class where the woman who was leading it, her name's Rebecca, was dressed like in full, like, good high budget costume as Katniss Everdeen, as we see her in the Hunger Games movie, and doing like every single move was like, all right now we're gonna take our weights and we're gonna beat to death another tribute. And it was like just fully, like, my boyfriend was cackling watching me do this, but it was hilarious. It was fun. It's just the kind of idiotic diversion that we need right now. So, you know, if you have 15 extra dollars a month laying around, or your mother, like mine, owns a Peloton, hit it up. And then out for me would just be, like, socializing in general. We shouldn't be doing it, but I'm also, you know, winter months, I don't want to see anyone. I don't, even when I look out my front window, there should be nobody standing out there. Human contact right now for me, I don't want it at all. So... yeah, that's about it. Nick, do you have an in and out for us?
Here's my in. If you're looking for a video game that is the same sort of genre that does everything right that this game does wrong, Dream Daddy, a dad dating simulator, is a game
incredible.
I love.
Incredible.
It's so good. Have you played it?
No, but I am dying to.
It's awesome. It's so well done. The art is great. You do get to create and customize your character. there is a lot of choice in terms of, you know, you have seven different dads and you choose which dad you're going to date. And it's funny without being like, you know, without making fun of things that shouldn't be making fun of it. Like, it walks that line really well. It's like, it's tonally, it's just great. The writing is great. And the art is awesome, and it's very simple, and it's a ton of fun. So Dream Daddy, a Dad Dating Simulator, that's in for me. And it can be for you if you're looking for a little diversion. That's just a real heart warmer. Out for me, if this is a personal thing, alcohol.
Yeah. Okay.
I had a rough binge this weekend where I just got smashed, and man, I cannot do that at my age. I do a little distance from Grandpa's cough medicine for a little bit.
Sophie and I have talked about this because my big issue in quarantine is drinking, you know, every night, which is not something I should do for my body. But Sophie actually put me onto this, and I would recommend it. It sounds kind of strange, but I've been making gin and tonics and substituting the gin for apple cider vinegar. And you still get a little bit of kick.
Yeah.
And it's also good for you because of the probiotic properties or whatever. But I've been enjoying that because it also forces me to drink it more slowly. I don't know. And then obviously the next day I am back to drinking full gin and tonics. So.
But if you alternate, like I drink apple cider vinegar pretty religiously, like 3 times a day, because it has all of the taste properties of alcohol, where it's like a little bit, you have like a little bit of sweetness, but also like that, like, ugh, this is kind of, you know, biting. And I would recommend it. It does wonders for your skin. It's great for your stomach. And you won't wake up the next day like wanting to just full on like pile drive your former self.
Man, what if only... If only that driver had been drinking apple cider vinegar and tonic.
I know, in the tunnel in France. Gosh. I know. Well, let's end on that note. RIP Diana. She did die like a week after I was born, but I've...
So you could be her reincarnate. I mean...
If maybe I didn't have a soul enter my body until like a week in. Like I was just kind of laying there like... and then it was... but yeah, so this is
and
our
we all know
first...
a soul enters your body at conception, right? We all agree.
Yes, exactly.
So biblically, it kind of challenges the beliefs that I hold.
Right.
So guys, our theme song, as always, is by Leggy. Check him out on Spotify. Find us on Instagram and Twitter at Girls Like Us Show. And this is very exciting. This is our first official episode under the umbrella of our new network. Girls Like Us is now part of the Frolic Podcast Network, and you can find more podcasts you'll love just like ours at frolic.media/podcasts.
Nick, do you have anything you'd like to plug?
Congrats on the new network. Very cool. I am, you can check out my podcast about chain restaurants, Doughboys, and my podcast about bad video games, How Did This Get Played, both available wherever you listen to things.
Incredible.
Awesome. Yay.
All right.
Well, thank you so much, Nick, for being on, and we will see you guys next week. Bye, everybody. Bye.